Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 5, Text 42. Yannastvam karma sandhanam sadhunam grihamedhinam kritavan asi durmasham vipriyam tava marshitam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Although I live in household life with my wife and children, I honestly follow the Vedic injunctions by engaging in fruitive activities to enjoy life without sinful reactions. I have performed all kinds of yajnas, including the Deva Yajna, Rishi Yajna, Pitru Yajna, and Nira Yajna. Because these yajnas are called vratas, vows, I am known as a griha vrata. Unfortunately, you have given me great displeasure by misguiding my sons for no reason to the path of renunciation. This can be tolerated once. Purport. Prajapati Daksha wanted to prove that he had been most tolerant in not having said anything when Narad Muni, for no reason, induced his 10,000 innocent sons to adopt the path of renunciation. Sometimes householders are accused of being grihamedis, for grihamedis are satisfied with family life without spiritual advancement. Grihasthas, however, are different because although grihasthas live in householder life with their wives and children, they are eager for spiritual advancement. Wanting to prove that he had been magnanimous to Narad Muni, Prajapati Daksha stressed that when Narad had misled his first sons, Daksha had taken no action. He had been kind and tolerant. He was aggrieved, however, because Narad Muni had misled his sons for a second time. Therefore, he wanted to prove that Narad Muni, although dressed like a sadhu, was not actually a sadhu. He himself, although a householder, was a greater sadhu than Narad Muni. Translation. So in continuation of Prajapati Daksha's vitriolic outburst against Narad Muni, we can see from the language and the tone in the previous verses and the following ones also, there are some similarities we see. It rings a bell, somewhat familiar. But of course, Prajapati Daksha was an infinitely more powerful personality than anybody today. But he's talking with such confidence, with surety, so-called surety in his thinking, what is right, what is wrong in his mind. He's very clear in his mind. He's very arrogant, and he's very in his thinking about what is right and what is wrong. And this is the full authority with which he is saying this. And what he is saying basically is his concept of what the life should be led, how one needs to, how he's perfect. As he says, he is that I'm living in a household life, I'm not doing any sins. That is what we, if you see today, there are broadly two classes of men. There are, because spiritually we are told that you have the devtas and the demons. Clearly that is true. But nowadays, if you see, leaving aside those who are genuinely interested in spiritual life, which you can count as a fraction of a percent, then if you take practically the status of today, then there are two categories. There are those who non-believers and those who are believers, the so-called believers. Even among the the general mass, if you, you know, various surveys, they point to a fact that a lot of people believe in God. In fact, just a few weeks ago, there was some survey in the U.S., and there also, they were saying that among the youth also, fairly large number do believe in the concept of God, and that there is some superpower and things. So we may think it's a paradox as to how come you have believers and then you have, and if we consider ourselves believers, and then how come we feel that what we are taught, our way of life and values are very much different. And we get a glimpse from Daksha's own point of view, because he is talking as one of the believers. So if you take the two categories of non-believers and believers, and we see, study what the mentalities are, the non-believers is fairly simple, because they clearly have the dominance of science, technology, they look for material prosperity for all or for themselves, clearly for themselves, but then they may also have a extended family, and say if they, especially if they're communistic or if they have a certain political inclination, they may say it is for their country or for others. At least they may say so. They may even believe so. They would talk of economic development, and there is no place for irrationality, as they call religion. They talk of a certain rational path. Basically, the dominance of science is the God for them. That science is everything, and religion, according to them, is not science. It is misplaced faith. And then, if you look at the so-called believers, which is a more complex group, because you have a lot of varieties of people. And I'm talking here of those who are not the serious, genuine devotees, irrespective of denomination. Because we know that there will be very, very few genuine devotees. They would be scattered all over the world. So we're looking at the so-called believers. They do have a certain faith in God. A lot of people, like the survey said, and in India especially, a very large number would definitely believe, by the millions. You have this Sabarimala Mela, or you have the Kumbh Mela. I mean, then suddenly you see on the Mahalakshmi during the, you know, Durga Puja or Navratri time. You know, you can see literally that lakhs of people are there spontaneously, just on one darshan. People go through great austerities. But then here they are looking for economic development, material goals, and ultimately the enjoyment for themselves, for ourselves. So this is the distinguishing factor, which is really where what, at least I would say in all our cases, probably the revolutionary thought that that Prabhupada brought in, a dimension which we would probably miss, is that primarily Krishna, not only there's a superpower, but Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and that we are meant to be enjoyed, and we are meant to sacrifice and live our life irrespective of ashram accordingly. This is where the, in a nutshell, the broad difference exists between the, because the outside believers, whatever hues and shapes they come in, the fundamental principle is that even if their belief is that they do Lakshminarayan puja, they do this katha, then they do their Satyanarayan pujas, whatever yagyas they do, like he talks of so many yagyas. Primarily these yagyas also they would do with a certain amount of pride. Even if they do know Shastra, they will do with a certain amount of pride. Primarily because they are looking at their own image, their own enhancement, their own power. So if they're doing yagyas or pujas, the goal would be that how can we benefit from that? While what Vedic, genuine Vedic Vaishnava philosophy indicates that we are, that in every instance, there is never a moment that the goal is not to be servant of the servant. That is what we are and what we always will be. And identifying with it, the earlier we do it, the happier we will be. To the extent that we deviate from that, from time to time also, either by behavior or belief, sometimes we will move away and come back. To that extent we will suffer, but we will come back once we've taken to the path. So this is where the difficulty lies. And then we can understand all the actions that we see outside, that there would be a primary goal of material advancement in most cases. Now, it may be that you may find that some people live very simple lives. Some people may live very very austere lives also. Certain revolutionaries we hear of, they have kept themselves in the, for 30, 40 years, they will dress in these these military fatigues. You only see them in one dress for 40 years, these dictators, some of them, and the socialists, as they call themselves. But then, first of all, in almost all the cases, eventually it comes out that, their families and extended people have amassed a lot of wealth. But even other than that, even if you believe that some people actually have not taken for themselves, but the fact is that they build a clique of people, a group, which controls others, and which over which they dominate. Under no circumstances will you ever find anyone, ever, that they are actually the servant of that group and they are invisible. Never. It is always that they will be the controller, they will be the dominator. And that really means that whatever they need to do, they will do to enhance their power. So finally what it comes down to is that whether you have a believer, means with a nominal belief, wherein you want to have, you want to control Krishna in a way. You want to control Krishna to your conception. We want him when it's convenient. For instance, when we have an exam or when we are in distress, we have a major operation, hospitalization, some major worry, then we suddenly think of him. We may do some charity to please him or to please many demigods. So it is with a motive. Or if we are doing something, if we really won a lottery and we are in a very expansive mood, very happy, and suddenly, and this is happening quite often nowadays, so that even makes people believe that there's no room for Krishna, that somebody gets 10 crores, 50 crores, because today the stock market, within a week, it increases 100,000 crores wealth, 200,000 crores of real money. Paper, but real paper. So this 200,000, somebody encashes that, he actually gains. He could get 100 crores, 50 crores, actually he can go and put it in his bank. So actually people do believe that they are, so when there's something like this happens and they believe, God is great. God is very merciful. You hear this often that when something nice happens, we say, God is great. God is very kind. The question is that means when something nice doesn't happen, that means he's unkind or he's not there. But so at that time, somebody may even say, okay, chalo, I feel like it, so I will give 5 crores for this endowment or 2 crores for this charity and feed the poor and quietly make sure that everybody knows about it. But therefore, this is when we want to control the Krishna in the way who he fits in into our thinking, the way we feel. That means ultimately for us to surrender our consciousness is really the crux of it. That being the servant will come only when we will take the authority of the Shastras coming in bona fide disciplic succession and hearing from the current Acharya and having a current and a contemporary and a regular surrender. Not that we have read it, we've thought about it, and we feel we've surrendered once and then we lead our own life independently. There is never any independence. There is independence, minute independence, which you've chosen voluntarily to exercise of being dependent. So today, when you see these hoardings, it is very funny, especially of all the people, the insurance companies, the ones who are supposed to insure. In fact, it is like an irony because Krishna's insurance is in a spiritual guide, and here the insurance companies give us a material issue. They will say, kal par control. Now, you've seen that there's a byline, one company, kal par control. That means we have control over tomorrow. That is their byline over this insurance company. So it gives you the impression that we can control everything, and you just invest in this insurance company, take our insurance policy, and you will have control over tomorrow. That is the way people can get fooled. Or another insurance company says, HDFC's you will never leave your independence. So it is going directly contrary to what we are taught, that actually we can never be independent. So they're saying that actually you leave this, you even in old age, this is especially appealing to the old people, that, and they show that old man playing with a small child or something, and then basically saying that, insinuating that in old age you become dependent on others. You don't need to depend on others. You will be independent on your own. So these are material gains, and therefore the whole message is also put in a material way. But ultimately, for a devotee, what we try to see is is the necessity of constantly trying to surrender our consciousness in following the path of Krishna. So therefore, when we cannot judge anyone externally, even by clothing or mannerisms or even by talk, ultimately it is, we see by the talk backed by action, by person's behavior, which would give us confidence as to whom we should follow. Because today, even those who talk seemingly like devotees or spiritual talk, I mean, they could be Mayavadis, it could be Sahajas, or it could be a different deviant philosophy which has no basis. So ultimately, therefore, the Shastras, we say hearing is the most important first, Shravanam, and understanding the with a deep interest. So even looking at someone's austerities, for instance, someone, we get impressed that this person does vrat in some religion. They will say that for 7 days they only have water or whatever. But we have to, that doesn't mean anything externally. Or someone is leading a very so-called moral life. He's leading a very Gandhian life also, which is people are in awe. So there is a certain thing in people that they do get attracted to simplicity, but then they want to combine it with their concept of material. They don't want to leave the goal of material progress and prosperity. It is such a strong brainwashing, such a strong feeling that economic development is the be-all and end-all. That is a given. That is absolutely given. There may be God, there may not be God, but economic development is the main goal, and our purpose is to just improve our standard. So within that, when they do see, oh, someone has had so much. For instance, this person has become so rich and he's only traveling, and he's a minister, but he's only having only 2 cars, not 100 cars behind him, which is, he's fairly, very simple. Yesterday I was, it's a big guy. He was talking about Rahul Gandhi and said, very simple. He came, he didn't have any security guards. So our concept is basically just the absence of something so abnormal that we consider that, oh, this person is very simple. So we cannot go by these external things, or somebody is not, he's a very honest person. But honest person means you may have interacted with him, externally and briefly. He may have any intent to be honest. But if he's really honest, then he would first of all admit what is the goal of life and who is the controller. If he doesn't admit that, then that's the first test. If you give him the fill in the blanks, first question. Who is the controller? Who is the supreme authority? If he doesn't say Krishna or God, then there only he fails. Then there is a dishonest person. And if he says that, then he has to live by that. So our concept of honesty, everything is has to be seen from the eyes of the Shastra. So that is why today, even if something appeals, sometimes the spiritual life does appeal to us, but many people may come to the temple, or they will be attracted because they have seen the miseries externally. But when they come to the temple and they get attracted because they see something different, but if it is not followed up with Shastra and with hearing, what happens is that they will again combine it with their concept of life and then try to fit it in a compartment, which it's a very neat fit, a very snug fit. And that then they think, oh, I've got the answer. It fits in well. I must come to the temple. I must come. But I have got this. It is only this part of my life. And then I've got my other part. So it is like a hobby or like a time period. So it is something which is again fitting into controlling Krishna, the image of Krishna into the way we want him, not the way he is and the way we have to fit in. So it is becomes the other way around. So ultimately it comes down to lording over or having that master, the tendency one way or the other. So even if it is not directly exercising, manipulating material energy, you may say that he is living a simple life, or he is, he seems to be an honest person, he is incorruptible, this bureaucrat is incorruptible. But that is in a mundane way. Okay, that is something which is better than being a totally corrupt person. But it is, instead of 0%, maybe 0.5%. But the larger aspect is, how is he leading his life? Because otherwise it is like Prabhupada said, it is honor among thieves. That ultimately all thieves, and then within that they have their certain honor, code of honor, that we have to be very true to it, and we have to follow that, and they will actually follow. So one of the major reasons why this happens is that when we talk of the believers, non-believers, or the categories of the complete non-believers and those who have nominal belief, that there is one of the common traits today is that because of economic development, and we see in the last 10 years there has been, so all over the world there is many people are becoming richer, but there is a very large number who also are either they're poor or become poorer also, and they are far larger number in billions, but because they are like the silent majority, they are not in authority, power, so they are not seen, they are not heard, except sporadically when excesses happen, then there is a revolution. But primarily it is mostly they are living in their own dreams and aspirations, because they have been enough brainwashed and fed into thinking that not today, then tomorrow, if not tomorrow, the day after. So they are also striving that, okay, this person made it, I can also make it. So therefore most of them would be in that category. But what is really driving them is one of the major factors is education. And if you really go to see that why people all across the world, especially those who are very much influenced by the Western mind, and those who have now become the so-called middle class in the upper middle class in India. Now they talk of the growing 100 million, 200 million in India who have become much richer. And especially, you know, the information technology industry, and there are hundreds of thousands of people are earning well. The emphasis and the effort on education is huge. So it is on two levels. One is at the primary level, there's a huge effort to see that even in the villages and towns, those who are not going to school must go to school. Somehow they must come to attend, to come to school, and then they may go to college. And the second level is for higher education. But at both levels, the purpose is very sinister, because they may have a strong belief in it, but the consciousness is primarily that with education, because we see that it's in the simple ways of life in the villages that is actually being destroyed. Family life is being destroyed. The absence of gross material desires is actually changed to a strong pursuit of material desires. So in fact, from a weak position, we're becoming weaker rather than stronger. We are in a weak position as long as we are in a consciousness of not having Krishna in the center. But instead of somehow bringing that, and a simple life, people who were even earlier, 50 years or 100 years ago, their lifestyles were relatively better off. Why? Because they had, they may have had different conceptions of God, but it was easier for them to believe in it. But by destroying that and by pursuing, particularly you'll see the emphasis everywhere from the Prime Minister of the other countries, and even the other countries take a special interest in India, because they know that India is like a threat, because I think they can sense the kind of spiritual potency that is still there, you know, which is not tangible, but it is there. And they see that, and therefore the emphasis all over is on educating girls. Constantly you see a tremendous bombardment that is the solution to all the problems. Now, what it is, it takes half-truths. So it is not that it is a, because it makes, usually the most dangerous are the ones where there is a half-truth. If it's a complete something ridiculous that everybody should go to the moon, nobody will believe. They say, what nonsense. No, not even one person has gone. Or even if people believe, there's only two people have gone or five people have gone. So how can we say that? So that can be thrown out. But when there's a certain half-truth or an element of truth, but largely twisted, because, and here the catch is because, yes, one may say that education does have certain gains, but it is largely outweighed by the kind of as Prabhupada very nicely put it, slaughterhouse education, because it is just enhancing our deep desires to go towards material prosperity. And not only that, what it does, particularly it goes beyond that. It destroys the values, it breaks down the family values, it breaks down the families, I would say, because to a large extent, because it encourages the pursuit of independence. It encourages that if I am educated, I have to, especially among girls, that the earlier lifestyles, which would be to make a happy grihastha life and to be supportive and to have their own spiritual quest, is completely squashed, because here they are put in a very unnatural situation, which is not only very stressful for them, but also which is, and because they are meant to be protected and to be led, and to be, of course, by responsible people. Here, not only the husbands or the men are exploiting them, but even they, because they contribute unwittingly in many cases, because by the pursuit of education, they are going into once you're educated, then in by most cases, I mean, there may be there are also cases where out of necessity for family needs, that's when somebody does out of austerity, it's another thing. But the whole effort is to see that, to encourage them and to motivate, and everywhere, and you see in the larger forums, I am fairly cognizant of what thinking is. You'll see in the most important forums, it is incredible how much emphasis they're putting on this. And they will put it in a way by saying that, see, you will have problems of dowry and sati and things like that will go away, or these child marriages will go away if you go. So they will highlight only those things which is very uncomfortable for them. So this is not to say that we propagate that. Obviously not. But to see in the larger context that if education is there, we don't say, as a devotee, we do not say that education or non-education. That is not the issue. The first is, who is controlling the world? What are the values based on? Are the values based on material prosperity or the values based on Krishna? If it is based on Krishna, then everything in that lifestyle, there is room for, of course, we have seen so much material prosperity in the previous yugas. It has come, but because it is, they see it as the mercy of the Lord, the mercy of the demigods coming through the Lord, and surrendering to that path, and then accepting whatever Krishna gives, and then distributing it evenly. So the whole economic model was entirely based on a different pursuit, and in that, there is room for, some people have that inclination for education. Certainly, there is a need for enhancement, and they do it. But they do it with a responsibility and use of it, not for their own personal aggrandizement or controlling others, but in a way which is for the benefit of society, under the guise of wise men. So you had the kings or the leaders who also surrendered to the wise men, to rishis and sadhus. So basically the varnashram system as it existed in the old, which is now whatever remnants you see, is a perverted reflection. But what it did was actually, was the effort was to gradually go towards, ultimately the whole lifestyle would be under the surrender of the Lord, and everything would then, everyone would be happy, and people who were in power would be more responsible towards others. So today, without that, it is actually because certain people exploit, and therefore, and they are in the background, so they will only take out those policies which, to the innocent public, which will be very appealing. So these are the ways which they then try to break down the society. And through that, what they achieve is that, because with material prosperity, the tendency to take up spiritual life is so less, because especially when you are young and you are seeing the benefits, it is like a dream come true. You are 25 and you are in a fantastic place. Yesterday, whole day I was at the Infosys campus in Bangalore. It's an incredible place. I mean, if you go there, it is so different than anywhere. You know, even in the West, you very rarely find such places. And you have something like 30,000 people in that one place. You know, it takes you 5-10 minutes just by car to go around. But you see, you know, there are thousands, and all are young. And you can see the, you know, and none of them must be earning less than 50, 60,000. That will be the starting, probably going to several lakhs a month. So what it does is that it gives them the confidence in their own abilities to manage their life and as if they have found the secret to success. This is the danger. It's not that we are against education or we are against this or that, but this is, and it is being done, and the people who believe in that. For instance, Infosys, their logo is, the caption, as we said, is powered by intellect, driven by values. Now, driven by values, and people believe in it. You know, the chairman is like a god for all the business people. Literally, every time he comes, there's a standing ovation. Every time he comes, there's a standing ovation. People are just, even the most successful people around the world, when, you know, he's that kind of. Why? Because he knows how to use, in spite of having that much power, he has given some inklings of his simplicity. He may travel economy class, so people are so amazed that, oh, he travels economy and, things like that. So people feel, and he has a very nice way of charming. But the point is that what he says or what he believes, and people will believe that, yeah, he's moral. They will talk of non-corruption. They will talk of education. Let people be educated. We are standing for compassion. We want to change people's lives. But what is the motive? The motive is that the more the prosperity, the market improves. The market improves means people will buy more. If people will buy more, then what will they buy? My products. And that's why trade will increase. And what will it come from? Exploiting material energy. Manipulating material energy and changing. Ultimately, it is for the resources only. Whatever has been given, the minerals, metals, whatever, is ultimately given by God. And you just exploit it and change it. But if it is not done with the proper consciousness, then it can lead to this kind of thinking. The mentality of Daksha represents the kind of thinking which permeates the so-called intellectual class today. That they would consider control of an exploitation of a way which is of their own concept of how the world should be. Just think that. A recent survey said that they took that 2% of the world, the richest 2% control 80% of the wealth. If you remember one statistic, it is that 2% of the world control 80%. So isn't any small child also, once he understands, he would say that there's something unfair in that. How is it that if we don't know how we are born, where we are born, and we are here. So isn't it fair that people should get? But how come 2% exploit own 80%? Or if you put it another way, that how is it that the richest person in the world, one man, just by his wealth is more than many nations in the world? There are, I would say, almost all African nations individually would not have, the whole country's wealth is not equal to one person's wealth. And how does he get? Just by showing you a better way of communications. In this world, if you see, if somebody is coming from heaven, I mean, just hypothetically, see, you're looking from heaven and looking at the state of affairs, and then you see how things are living, and then all are tiny microbes, and then you see that, okay, they need to interact with each other. One of the things, they came up with a computer, and that is the way to communicate. And then one person shows them how they can improve gives them the software to connect systems. And by that, one person owns more than many countries. One would think that there is something grossly unfair. I mean, something really wrong with the way things are. So any natural, normal person would think that there is something wrong with this. How can you say that that there is fairness. You talk of compassion, you talk of fairness. Then you may put up an endowment, you may put up this, a foundation, this, that. Everything is, then newspapers also are controlled by them. So everything is really a matter of to fool the public. So basically, manipulating material energy without understanding where the energy comes from is the danger. And that comes from the consciousness of not accepting Krishna as the supreme and living by that. And that in turn comes from association. So that is why, you know, we are constantly told, nectar of instruction, Prabhupada, etc., that, you know, avoiding material association or avoiding association with non-devotees is as important as associating with devotees. So two are not the same. Associating with devotees is a must for bringing the awareness and drilling it in gradually, because it is, you know, our natures are such. But just that also needs to be protected and nurtured like a small bud. By not associating with devotees and by keeping away, not associating with non-devotees because of the danger. It's not with a kind of superiority feeling. It is just that we are in a battle of survival, and we once we have known the truth, once we have known we cannot forget it, then it's a matter of whether we are able to follow it or we are not able to follow to the fullest extent. Then we should do whatever we can to follow. So in order to do that, this protection of ourselves is of paramount importance. This arguments of our Daksha, the previous verse, that material enjoyment is indeed the cause, and how you have to first experience it. Yesterday you must have seen that, and his argument is ingenious, that, you know, we have to, unless we actually taste it, unless you get tired of material enjoyment, how will we leave it? So just to, and it is actually, it is not that, this is the first time I heard it. I mean, we hear this often. The first time I heard it was from Mahaprabhuji, our Mahaprabhuji. This I will not, never forget. He told me, this was when he's joined, just in the first few months or years of his joining, maybe 79, 80. And he was reading some literature of some guy who had some ashram in Pune, and his whole philosophy was very different. How you should actually, if you have more sex, then you need to have more, then you get tired of it, then you'll renounce it. So it's very similar to a Daksha thing. And he was reading, he had that book in his hand, and Giriraj Maharaj came from behind, you know. And Mahaprabhuji was caught with that book, so he was very embarrassed. Of course, he had not even taken initiation. He was just a few months in the movement. But this was when he was in that stage representing ISKCON in the court cases. And Giriraj Maharaj said, "What are you reading?" So then, you know, Mahaprabhu just saw, so he showed him. And then he said, "Why are you reading this?" And so then he started defending, saying, "Unless you read this," Mahaprabhu saying, "unless you read this, how will you know? You have to actually experience and you have to know that." So I don't know if you may have heard this story, because it's I've heard it many times over the last 20 years. But in case you've not, the Giriraj Maharaj's one-line answer was a classic. He said, "You don't have to eat stool to know it is stool." So this is something which we can remember. He says, and Mahaprabhuji has repeated this so many times. So this is something what we see, that sometimes we feel that let me experiment it. Let me just see. You know, how do I know that? Just remember Giriraj Maharaj's answer, that you don't have to eat stool to know it is stool. You smell it, you know it is bad, you just leave it. Also, Prabhupada comments in this wonderful Bhagavatam verse. The verse says that in the first canto, that men who are like dogs, hogs, camels and asses, praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna, the deliverer of evils. And in that, Prabhupada explains in the purport, he says, dogs, this modern university education develops this doggish mentality, because through that we accept the service of a master. And after finishing so-called education, the so-called educated person moves like a dog from door to door with an application for some service, and he's mostly driven away with a no vacancy sign. This is what Prabhupada was to say. And so basically what he says that, you know, if we become, this dogish mentality comes from becoming faithful to a certain system for little crumbs of bread, which anyway Krishna can provide. So one way answer that, how is it that we are also having jobs and we are working outside, and that means we are being hypocritical? No, the answer is that we have to make the best of a bad bargain, but it's a matter of the consciousness and what we do it for. It's also a matter of whether we are maximizing it or minimizing it. So all this will really come, ultimately only Krishna knows. So no matter what somebody exhorts, one would never know. But ultimately only Krishna knows. But nevertheless, we can struggle towards that. And that will also again come only if we are following that certain path wherein we can have restraint in and guidance, so that whatever has come in our, whether it's fame, intelligence, money, good looks, whatever, physical power, anything, any attributes that come, artistic talent, if it's seen in the consciousness that has come from the Lord, then there are ways of being creative and how it can go back to the Lord. So basically, Prabhupada has said that ISKCON and Vaishnava devotees are primarily for this. Krishna consciousness is really to train devotees developing first-class men and women for the new leadership that society needs. And we talked of the Varnashram Dharma, you have the various categories. And those whose inclinations, the Brahmin, though they're all the same, but still the Brahmin class, the ones who would need to give the guidance, it's like the needle, the compass needle, that it has to move towards, not to deviate from the approach for spiritual path and pointing towards, ultimately towards Krishna. So that they play that role, so that everything else, the administration, the development, agriculture, the various artistic talents, so many things that are being done in society can be done harmoniously, because they are done in conjunction with satisfying the Lord. And that's the role that the Brahmins play. And that in turn comes from the preachers, the ones who have renounced their lives. So there is a role for everybody to play. Those who have limitations, they can follow in their certain way. So through that, we can actually improve our lives and follow what Narad Muni is saying rather than what Prajapati Daksha is saying. So we stop here. Are there any questions? Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Prabhupada. Thank you for your very nice class. Actually, this topic was somewhat, we can relate that there is more in terms of industrialization and turn away from agriculture, which used to be India's main this thing. And agriculture also, if we see, gives more employment to men and helps in overall a more holistic lifestyle somewhat. So recently we were gone for book distribution. We met one person in a big computer company. So he gave us permission and everything. And in the end, while discussing, he said, I'm a totally atheist. And then things came on how India can be improved. And as you said, like everyone is for high GDP and economy and things like that. So he was telling our biggest drawback is that we are still very much into agriculture. We should develop more industry, computers and like that. And also recently in Indian Express, a very leading columnist, he said that the biggest problem of India going downward in economy, still it's because agriculture based. And we should develop more, and especially these special economic zones and other things which are coming up, taking a lot of agriculture land. So how can we defend saying that, because Prabhupada also emphasized this lifestyle, how we can defend in terms of hard data and something like to give them stats and all, that agriculture also is very productive, not only from maintaining a proper consciousness, but also in terms of contribution to nation's economy.
I could give a 2-hour class on this. There are very few things I can talk on, but this. So I'll try to do it in 3 minutes. Basically, ultimately, see, it's the consciousness that will matter, because if the pursuit is, if you're talking that material progress is needed for happiness, for everyone's happiness, then we have to see what makes people happy. See, for them it is completely impossible to believe that the whole model of economics today is that whether it's capitalist, communist, whatever, basically what they talk of, just increase the demand, market-driven, consumerism as they call it. And that is actually the basis of the whole destruction of, because the more they whet your appetite, the more they bombard you, the more they give you that taste, the flavor that you, as they say that, I was to learn in marketing and I've repeated it several times that, you know, the best market, the best salesman is someone who can sell a refrigerator to an Eskimo. We remember hearing, some of you may have seen it, heard in economics, a statement that Eskimo stays in the with the snow. He doesn't need any cold. I mean, and if you can sell a refrigerator, that means you are a great salesman. So it is basically trying to get people to purchase more and more of what they need little or they don't need. It is how to create demand and how to increase that. Right, the whole model is on that. And to satisfy that, they're talking of growth. They're talking of exploiting material energy. They're talking of exploiting the resources, manipulating material energy. Basically, it is that. That ultimately, how do you increase from 8% to 9% for the country, 9 to 10%, and keep on doing that. And that's the strain. That is why the worry that we'll run out of oil, what will happen, what because we need that today. Everything is I. But the whole Vedic model is on a totally different basis. You reduce the demand. You reduce the demand. Actually, the whole spiritual approach, and it was there in the past before the Industrial Revolution also, which is only 200 years old. It is only in the late 1700s, 1780, 1790. So we're talking only of 210 years. So prior to that, and certainly much before when the spiritual awakening was more, was basically that you lead a simple life and you reduce demand. Not just maintain, but reduce. And just imagine if, hypothetically, that in this room, I'm just saying there's a scattered of, there were maybe 100 people here. If this was multiplied into 6,000 or 600, and the world population is based only of these people, let's say, 6 billion people of this. Just imagine, now look at your own lifestyles and say, what do you want? What do you want? What would be, so you are probably reflecting what we talk of, so how many things you don't need? So primarily, there is a conflict there itself, that here there is a market-driven, that you must consume more, and then because of that, you then, the whole man's intelligence, people consider them brilliant if somebody's written a PhD on some abstract topic, just so that he can, you know, he has done some survey about something or the other, and he has spent 10 years on that. And he has that IQ, but he has spent it on such a waste. Only why? Because it helps one aspect of how to improve material life rather than reducing demand. So if you accept that reducing demand means you live simply, you get what you need, and now in the, if you talk about the sheer economics itself, Prabhupada keeps on saying the Vedic economy, that you know, you need a cow, you need milk, you need grains, you need land. So basically, if you have a cow and land, he says, keeps on saying this. There's a whole booklet, if you, I don't know if you have it, but because Devamani Prabhu had prepared it when we had this, you know, the Venu Madhuri approach and all. So that lot of research was done on that. It's very, very interesting. Prabhupada's thoughts on, collected from all his books on the economy. So primarily comes to that if you have a cow and land, you can fulfill it. Now you may say that the world is not meant for living on that. So yes, today you're not expecting this world to completely change into that. But this is a reality that people are living in that, people can be simple and people can be happy. Now it's a matter of the consciousness. He is more happy than somebody who has $5 billion also. So it's a matter of, should we not see how we could in progress towards analyzing and understanding how what makes this simple man who has no education, who's staying in the village, how come he is happy? What has he got? And it's not just the material things that he has his gain, but it's his way of life, his social status, his whole approach that he's sharing with his neighbors, he's happy, he's sacrificing time, he's supporting others, you know, there is time for others. Means, in other words, there is an element of giving to others, materially, time, consciousness, love, everything. You live for others also, very much. Same way, and if it is done under the auspices of the Supreme Personality and His rules within His life, then there's a lot of contentment. So ultimately, people are striving for that, but they have been brainwashed into thinking that this is what is needed. So if you go on a strict, leaving aside the spiritual part, if you look at the economics also, today the exploitation that is being done, people are saying that there is starvation and there's growth. If you say that, forget the aspect of God completely, forget spirituality, we just talk about economics. If you say that everybody says that smoking is bad, everybody says that drinking is bad, even the nations are battling it out because of these powerful companies who are trying to stop it, but and they're tying them up in legal knots. But otherwise, all these countries are trying to see that advertising is banned and people get around it. So this is admitted. Now you see the choicest lands are going for tobacco. The choicest lands are going for rye. Now, and the most important, 80% of the land in the country of USA, 80% of the land is going to feed the animals which are in turn being slaughtered. 80%. In a book which is written by a non-spiritual person, by an ecologist, he says that if 10% of the Americans, if 10% of the Americans become vegetarians, if 10% of the Americans become vegetarians, 60 million people in the world would be fed more. 60 million people in the world. This is an irrefutable fact. Manaka Gandhi supported it, many others. I mean, there is no question about it. Because the ratio of the land that goes to feed is something like 15 times the multiple, which is given to the hogs and the cattle and all, which are fattened, compared to a human being what he needs, the pound of grains that he needs. So we can see from even common sense that actually there is enough for everyone. What to speak of the wasteful tendencies? What to speak of how much billions of tons of grains are being wasted in so many things which are not necessary? And especially if you lead a lifestyle which is vegetarian, and if your health improves, even from a health point of view, people are turning to vegetarians. So it is not just, but we talk of it on a spiritual basis, but people are turning to it. People who are atheists also, just for their own self-preservation, they're becoming vegetarians. So we can see that actually, if pure, sheer, hard, scientific approach also, but an objective approach, will take you to the fact that if you are a vegetarian, the world is better off, and and lifestyles are better. And add to this various things like the wasteful, how much money goes into this. This cosmetic industry is a $40 billion industry. 200,000 crores a year. Now, you imagine how much material energy has been wasted, primarily, in selling what? A dream. What to speak of hair dyes and all these. I mean, take the whole, we are talking of something which is not even in our imagination in the wildest dreams. So, there is that much amount of waste. So, basically, there is enough for everyone. If they were just to turn to understanding what will satisfy them. So, and ultimately, what we are also eating or drinking is just variations of that. It is just the way that we have been brainwashed into thinking that this form and that form and this way and that, if you take Nariyal Pani, it's so nice. And you go to Oberoi, they'll charge you 95 rupees for the same Nariyal Pani. So it doesn't change, it doesn't become 95 times more. You pay 5 rupees or 7 rupees here and you pay 9. So it's just that they're selling you for their services the exotic ambience, the psychology of being in a wonderful place. You feel so happy. You feel nice. You feel recognized. You are among the elite. You have arrived. You have arrived in society and life. And you bring your friends there and they know that you have arrived. See, and for that you pay 95 rupees for a Nariyal Pani or a 5,000 rupee meal for one person. So, and this is happening, why restaurants and all are so popular. People like to eat out. So it is just a way of expressing their life. So basically, much of what people are pursuing is not just economic, but it is extended around it. It is their lifestyle, it is their values, it is their belief, which comes from what they have been brainwashed into thinking. That, yes, I have lived my life. I have earned it. I am intelligent. I am committed to this. So I should also enjoy. I must also spend. And I'm doing it properly. I'm saving. I'm doing this. I'm investing in this mutual fund. I'm doing this. I'm that. I'm preserving for my... So I'm responsible. I'm not harming anyone. We constantly hear this. I'm good. I'm not harming anyone. So then why God is doing this to me? Often you hear that. So this is a whole different span which comes from missing the first leg. And that is accepting who is the controller and what is your role. Basically, then the whole thing moves out. So economics also, even without spiritual aspect, it is absolute common sense. That it's such a clear, wasteful area. I just give one example. If you take so many aspects of things that people, if you actually start, you can spend days on that analyzing, do I need this, do I need that? Sir, how much money into that? Each one is a multi-billion dollar industry. So, for instance, steel. I mean, take iron ore and so much is being produced. 60 million cars are being produced every year. 60 million. And people generally would use it for 6-7 years. So 600 million or 500 million cars, vehicles, are there all over the world at any time. So imagine how much aluminium, how much steel, how much glass, how much plastic, how much... Just one item. Leave aside, you know, refrigerators, windows, doors, houses. I mean, you can just see. So it's a matter of whether you need 10 of that or you need one of that. So it's a matter of how you use it. You know, so the whole aspect of economics is a complete... So it's almost futile to talk to someone who... They just cannot. You know, I've tried it a few times. And it is not even that they're shocked or anything. It doesn't register in their mind. You know, when I just talked, I said that... don't you think that supposing we just reduce demand? I mean, that would be much better. Just reduce demand. Why do you want to increase demand? Then you're talking of supplies being short. You're talking worried about resources being less. Just reduce it. Serve it to, I mean, share it with others. And how much do you need? Supposing people, instead of having five houses, they have just two houses, the rich also. Is it possible? It's something which is they think is a joke, and they will not even comment on it. It's amazing to see. It's not that someone gets outraged and all that. They don't even react to it. They think it's something unthinkable, it's a joke, so they will just ignore it and go away. And they talk something. They thought it was a passing joke. I mean, it is not even worth even thinking of. Because it cannot even register in their mind, how is it possible that we have to reduce something, we have to increase. And therein is the brainwashing that happens from childhood only. You know? In schools also, in the best of schools, they teach the best of that, in the best of ways. You know, that's the thing. That's the difference between a very good primary school and a average. So it's just how they can do it more and more. So it's a long subject, but I can tell you one thing that, you know, if it's difficult to argue with someone because if we're talking on, it's like talking to an atheist in a sense. You know, just they wouldn't accept that. Principle. They will say it is not realistic. They will say you can do it, no, others cannot do it. But why can't others do it? I mean, if they want to. So, yes, most people are not going to do it. But that's why, therefore we are in Kaliyug, and therefore there's going to be degradation, misery, difficulties. So then, fine. But there is a class of people, there are people who are happy by being simple. They will not be seen outside, but they're living their lives. And it's not just in the renounced order, it is in all the ashrams. And thereby, not just 5 or 10, they're in the millions. Maybe not in 6 billion, a few millions. Definitely. And not just in India, elsewhere also. And not just ISKCON, elsewhere also. There are others. We may not know because we don't need to advertise it. We just find it. So there are people. But if you seek, then you find. So it's a matter of... But there are irrefutable arguments we can put, but then they would not hear it. That's the thing. Let's stop here. Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.